Virtus is the Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess. Well, howdy there, gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Virtus. I appreciate you checking out this podcast and tuning in. Today on the show, I want to do a book review on an old school book that I recently finished reading. And I wanted to simply just, without spoiling the plot, because I want to encourage you to read it, without spoiling the plot, I wanted to reflect a little bit on this book. This is a book, as I said, is very old, and it has been very, very influential throughout history. And that book is The Odyssey by Homer. And the reason I wanted to go ahead and review this is I had a goal this year to read through the three epic poems of Western civilization, and those three epic poems being the Iliad, the Odyssey, both by Homer, and then the Aeneid by Virgil. So I did that. I read through each one of them, and this one was my favorite. I think in years to come, I'll probably reread them, and this was the last one I read of the three, so maybe I was more familiar just with the flow of the writing, the concepts, the sentence construction. But this one was my favorite. But I plan to go ahead and read those again at some point in the future. But I did read all three of them. And I just wanted to reflect upon this book and draw some lessons that I learned, some things that I found interesting, and things that really, I think, have impacted me on a personal level. To make me a better man, to make me a better human being. So I wanted to bring that to you again up front. I'm going to try not to spoil the plot. And I really want to encourage you to go ahead and read this book. It's really, really great. Before I get into the three things that I want to talk about in depth, let me just say up front that this book, The Odyssey, and the Aeneid and the Iliad, they cast very long shadows throughout the course of history. These books are referenced multiple times in other books. These books are even down to today. When you think about a movie like O Brother, Where Art Thou? That movie is broadly in a lot of instances based off this book, The Odyssey. So this book has impacted Western civilization, really the world, all throughout the time of history. And it was Jordan Peterson, probably not the first to say it, but Jordan Peterson I heard say that you can measure the greatness of a book by the way that it impacts and affects other books. And there's no doubt that The Odyssey has done that for many, many books throughout history. So these books, they cast a very long shadow. Another point about up front about this book is that, you know, we talk about hospitality as believers. I mean, the Greeks knew how to do hospitality, and there's many instances in this book about hospitality where someone would be a stranger, and they show up to a wedding feast, and they are given the best seat, and they are given the best wine and the best meat and that type of thing. The characters in this story really know how to do hospitality, so that's one thing that challenged me as well. But in particular, when it comes to, you know, masculinity, when it comes to character development, I think that this story is really, really good to do that. And let me share a few of those things with you. Number one, The Odyssey is a hero-producing story. Not just The Odyssey, but The Aeneid and The Iliad. These are hero-producing stories. When you read this, you feel like you want to be a hero. When you read this, when you read the plot, when you look at the characters, you want to be a better person. You want to be a hero. And when it comes to being a man, I think that as men, we need an inspiration and we need an example. We need an inspiration, someone to look up to, and then someone to look out toward in an example. We need inspiration, someone to look up to, and we need an example, someone to look out toward to see how to live. We need an inspiration and an example. And I think that that's what this story gives us, The Odyssey. And I can imagine a lot of Greek young boys listening to this story, being familiar with the story. And what we have here in the story is inspiration in the person of Odysseus and an example in the person of Odysseus. So these are hero-producing stories. Odysseus is the hero of this story. And throughout this story, he comes into contact with cyclopses and sea monsters, witches, sirens, and he has to confront men who are his enemies. So that's kind of some of the things that he gets himself into in this story. But he is also a man, as an example, he's a man of wit and cunning and cleverness. He's a man of wisdom. He's a man of purpose and resolve. He's a man of great victory, but he's also a man of great failures and sometimes folly. He does foolish things sometimes, rash things sometimes, and ultimately he has a desire for a home and for a place. And I think that's something that all those things is something we can resonate with. The story is good in and of itself, but also the character of Odysseus is one, as I said, to try to produce a heroism in our own life. I can imagine young Greek boys just picking up on this story, loving it, and wanting to be like Odysseus. Now, the great thing about these two Greek epic poems and the one Latin, the Aeneid is the Latin one. The author, they tell you exactly what characteristics or what virtues this certain hero is lifted up for, and the characteristics and virtues that we should glean from these stories. I mean, these authors come out and exactly tell you exactly what, you know, Odysseus is being lauded for. For example, Odysseus several times throughout the poem is called Noble Odysseus. He is called the man for all occasions. He is called that rugged man. He is called the great tactician. And Odysseus is the master mariner and soldier. Sometimes people will denote these things to him, but sometimes before he starts speaking, the author will preface that, his speech like that. The man for all occasions said, noble Odysseus said, the great tactician said this. So we see in Odysseus a hero that we should look to and learn something from. And in fact, King Menelaus, who is actually married to Helen of Troy, who kind of started the whole, or was at the middle at least, the middle of the whole Trojan War and the Trojan debacle. This is what King Menelaus says about Odysseus. He says, "In my life I have met in many countries foresight and wit and many first-rate men, but never have I seen one like Odysseus for steadiness and a stout heart." That's how he describes Odysseus. He says that he's met many first-rate men, men of foresight and wit, but never has he, implying, met one like Odysseus with foresight and wit, and never has he met one with steadiness and a stout heart. And if you're not familiar with the story of the Iliad and the history surrounding it, you probably are familiar with the Trojan horse, right? We have that reference down to us today. But Odysseus was the one who came up with the plan of the Trojan horse. It was his brainchild, it was his idea, and it was that Trojan horse that ultimately gave the Greeks, the Achaeans, victory over the Trojans. So we see that Odysseus is a man that is lifted up that we should look to, and these stories are hero-producing stories. When you read this book, you will find yourself wanting to dive deep into it. The story is just captivating. I found myself wanting to stay up later or come home early from work just to be able to read and get into the story. But these are hero-producing stories. Next, there's a theme in this book, what I'm going to call the father and son theme throughout the book, fathers and sons. We have Odysseus, who has a son by the name of Telemachus, and we have Odysseus's father, Laertes, who is also not a big character in this story, but he's at least a pretty significant character in the life of Odysseus. And what's interesting is that Odysseus is gone, and he is away from his homeland. Telemachus, He has a desire to know his father. He has a desire to figure out what's wrong with him. You know, is he out at sea? Is he dead? Is he vanished? Where's he at? No one's heard from him. So the son has a desire for the father. Telemachus has a desire for his father, Odysseus, and he just doesn't know, you know, what has happened to him. So he goes out to sea to talk to Odysseus's old war buddies, King Menelaus, being one of them, as I quoted from. He's one of them, and he talks to Nestor, and he talks to all these guys just to figure out, you know, what's going on. He has a desire to know his father. And Laertes, Odysseus's father, once he realizes that Odysseus has been gone for a long time, he actually kind of retreats from society and basically takes a vow not to come back until he figures out what's happened to his son. And so there really is a beautiful tension, a beautiful relationship, a beautiful theme in this book between fathers and sons. And what it reminded me of is the ministry of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was called to turn the hearts of the fathers back to their sons. Turn the hearts of the fathers back to their children. Something pretty interesting. You know, he is the forerunner to Christ. So you would think that his ministry would just simply be proclaiming Christ, getting people ready, you know, the baptism of repentance. But it says that John will turn the hearts of their fathers to the sons and to the children. And that's so fascinating to me that one of the ministries of John the Baptist, and really one of the ministries of the Holy Spirit as well, is to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children. And we see that really lived out in this book. Telemachus basically grows up without a father. Odysseus is essentially being gone for 20 years, his whole life. And there's almost some question as to whether Odysseus is even Telemachus's father. But he has this father hunger in his heart. He has this desire to know more about his father. And as I was thinking about this theme throughout the book, and as I was thinking about John the Baptist, I realized, you know, the potency that there is in a line of men in a family. The potency, the power that there can be in a line of men within a family, but also the destruction that there can be in a line of men. For example, I am blessed to have a very, very, very great father in my life, and I'm also blessed to have two grandfathers in my life who were excellent to me. Now, both of them have gone on and passed away. It's been several years now, but my grandfathers still affect me to this day. My grandfathers, the vision I had for them, the memories I have for them, the type of men that they were, still affects me to this day. I think about my grandfathers, and I think though, and I remember the qualities that were admirable in them, and I want to be like that. And you know, a lot of the inspiration in my life can really be traced back to my grandfathers. Even some of the things, some of my tastes and preferences, really can be brought back to my grandfathers. And that's just so fascinating that they had that effect upon me and my father. You know, my father is one of the biggest heroes in my life. And if I could just be a fraction of what he is, I would be very, very blessed and lived a good life. But we see that in the Odyssey, this father hunger. And that just also reminded me, you know, men, and in my own life, we should be remembered by our children. So I would encourage you to strive to be remembered by your children. If something were to happen to you, how would you be remembered by your kids? If your kids are young and at home, how would you be remembered in the minds of your children? You know, I have a 5-month-old, almost a 6-month-old here at home, and if something were to happen to me, God forbid, how would my son remember me? How would he be like Telemachus? Would he be wondering what's going on with his father? Would he hear stories of both good and bad from people who knew me? You know, how would I be remembered in the mind of my children? And something that I'm committing to do is to do that, to be remembered by my son in case something were to happen to me. And one way I'm doing this is that my wife got one of those books that you log memories and you write things down for your kids when in the first year of their life so that they can go back and look at it, kind of like a memory book, scrapbook kind of thing. And my wife has been very, very consistent in writing that thing, and I have not committed to that, but I'm going to commit to that. I'm going to write, you know, each month there's a section for dad to write, and I'm going to write a little letter to my son so that he has something to remember me by. I'm going to try to leave him an inheritance to start working now, to leave him an inheritance, to be remembered by him, because Telemachus grows up without a father, and you can tell there's a deep desire to know what's going on with his father. There's a deep desire to know his father. And it's a desire that, you know, I think is totally natural, but it's something that just really affected me in a pretty profound way. So there's that theme of the father and the son in this book. And lastly, I want to reflect a little bit, or I want to reflect on what the Odyssey reflects on as well, the nature of men and women, the nature of men and women. Now, there is a nature to mankind. Human beings have a nature, but there's also a nature to men and women. Men have a different nature than women have. They are similar in a lot of ways, but there are many ways that they are very, very distinct. And in this book and in the other epic poems, men are generally speaking regarded for their strength and for their fighting skills, and women are regarded for their beauty. At the center of each of these books is a warrior. We have Achilles in the Iliad, we have Aeneas in the Aeneid, and we have Odysseus in the Odyssey, and these are men of war. These are men of battle. And many of the women in these books are regarded as beautiful. The wives of these soldiers, women, the characters, in this book, the nymphs, the goddesses, they are known to be beautiful. And I think that these two ideals, these two things, strength for men and beauty for women, are really sewn into the fabric of all society. You look at different cultures around the world, and men are regarded for their strength, and women are regarded for their beauty. And this is exactly what the scripture teaches us. In Proverbs, it says that the glory of young men is their strength. The glory of young men is their strength. And Peter says, you know, ladies, let your beauty not be merely external. So he realizes that the women are already beautiful, but they're called not to be just beautiful on the outside, but also on the inside. Paul says that woman is the glory of man. Woman is the beauty of man. And what's interesting, this strength for men and beauty for women is our greatest virtue, but it also can be our greatest vice. We know that men have used their strength for abuse. We know that men have used their strength for very, very evil things and bad things. In fact, if you were to look up, you know, all the serial killers and things like that, the vast majority of them are men. That is an example of using, an extreme example of using strength for evil things. But at the same time, it can be a vice. It is also our greatest virtue. Men should be strong for the protection of others. At the same time, beauty for women, it is their greatest virtue and it is their greatest vice. When used in the proper direction, a woman is beautiful. And everyone knows it. You know, that natural beauty is something that women are lauded for. And that's a good thing. That is a good thing, but it is also at the same time our greatest, or it is the woman's greatest vice. You think about things like pornography and prostitution. That is using beauty in an abused and perverse way. So strength for men and beauty for women can be our greatest virtue and can be our greatest vice. And these things, as I have said in previous podcasts, these are things that are rooted in biology. These are things that are rooted in biology, and I've said creation speaks. The way that God has created us says something. Biology is inescapable, and so these realities are inescapable. For example, when it comes to strength, men have the capacity for more strength than women. Our bones are organized differently. We have testosterone pumping through our veins, and testosterone is the is the hormone that increases strength in men. Women do not have nearly as much testosterone. Therefore, we have the ability to be stronger. We know that the men are far more visual creatures when it comes to sexual attraction than women. And so when a woman is beautiful, men are naturally attracted to that beauty. That's kind of how it is in our biology. We are more visual creatures. We know also that women are generally attracted to men who are strong, men who win status competitions, men of authority, men in particular positions of power. That's what women are attracted to, that strength. That's what they are attracted to. So these things, strength and beauty, they really are inescapable. They are sewn into the fabric of society. We see it in the scriptures. We see it in this book, and we see it across many other cultures. And I wanted to read a couple of sections for you highlighting this. This first passage is from the Iliad. And Hector, the hero of Troy, is talking to his wife. And his wife is essentially saying, do not go to war because you could die. And if you die, you're going to leave me and you're going to leave your children, you're going to leave him. Oh, this is the Odyssey. You're going to leave him fatherless. And this is what Hector says to his wife. I got the books in front of me. I'm flipping through. So she says these things, and this is what Hector says. He says, "Then tall Hector of the shining helm answered her, 'All these things are in my mind also, lady. The fact that he might die, the fact that he, you know, might leave his child an orphan.' He says, 'All these things are in my mind also, lady. Yet I would feel a deep shame before the Trojans and the Trojan women with trailing garments, if like a coward I were to shrink aside from the fighting. And the spirit will not let me, since I have learned to be valiant and to fight always among the foremost ranks of the Trojans.'" And he says, "This is what I have to do. I am called to this. I am called to be valiant. I am called to fight among the foremost ranks of the Trojans." He would feel a deep shame if he were not to do that. And he goes on to say, "If I were to die in battle, people will laud you. People will look up to you." And he says, "People will say this of you. This is the wife of Hector, who was ever the bravest fighter of the Trojans, breaker of horses in the days when he fought about Troy." And he says, go therefore back to your house and take up your own work and the loom and the distaff to see to it that your handmaidens ply their work also. But the men must see to the fighting. The men must see to the fighting." We have another example in the Aeneid, the main character Aeneas. This is how Virgil describes him on a few occasions, the opening lines to this poem. Virgil says this, "I sing of warfare and a man at war." I sing of warfare and a man at war. It says that Aeneas, later on in the first chapter, "There is none more just, more zealous, or none more greater in warfare and in arms than Aeneas." He is a man of war. He is a man of battle. And this is what Odysseus says to some of his enemies that he encounters in his travels. Homer says, "Odysseus glowered under his black brows and said, 'Not for the whole treasure of your fathers, all you enjoy, lands, flocks, or any gold, put up by others, would I hold my hand. There will be killing until the score is paid. You forced yourselves upon this house. Fight your way out or run for it if you think you'll escape death. I doubt one man of you skins by.'" He's talking to his enemies and he says, "You better get ready. You better fight your way out. There will be killing until the score is paid." So you see the men are fit for battle. And women, as I said, there are many, many instances, although I quoted things particular to the men, there are many instances where women are lauded to be beautiful, and women are lauded to be the glory of man, as the Apostle Paul says. And I think that because we are further away from the state of nature, because human beings in the 21st century in America, we are further away from how the world really is, the fact that the world is a dangerous place. Because we are further away from that, and I'm glad we're in a safe place, don't hear me in that, but because we are further away from that, I think that we are a little out of touch with the nature of men and women. Essentially, a lot of people think that men are just like women, and women are just like men. They are just interchangeable. There's no nature to them, and that's why we have extreme things like transgenderism, but also things, in our time today, the fact that women can go to battle. The fact that women can do those types of things that have historically been fit for men. Now, that is not to say that there are instances of women in battle in the Aeneid, for sure, but just the idea that there is a nature to men and a nature to women. I think that the ancients were much more accustomed to that. So, I want to encourage you to read the book. I found it fascinating. I hope I'm not bringing it up too high to where you're going to be disappointed, but I found this to be just a great story. You know, it's like a 400-some-odd page book, and I read it in less than a week. I was just so excited about it and just wanted to get through it. So go ahead and pick up the book. I'm sure you can find a cheap copy anywhere, but that is the Odyssey. That is the Odyssey. These are stories that produce heroes. There's the theme of the father and the son, and there's the nature. There is a nature to men and to women. Well, thanks for being with me, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtus is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.